Welcome to The First Serve, talking the world of tennis on 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport, for AFT Hire. For all your temporary fencing and portable toilet hire, call 1300 946 660 or log on to afthire.com.au.
My understanding, Paul, is that one of his shoulders isn't too flash at the moment. So might miss Brisbane potentially. Yeah, a little rumour going around that that shoulder might be too flash and he might skip Brisbane.
Well,
whether it has a long-standing effect for the summer, we'll wait and see.
It's a strong rumour, okay. So it's not confirmed, but I'm hearing whispers that it may be played at Kooyong, a grass court rolled out
strong
there.
Strong rumours. Whisper.
A couple of whispers here and there. Around the traps.
Right, yeah. Kooyong, that'd be great.
It may be all fodder, but yeah, if it was to be played at Kooyong, I think that would be wonderful.
Good morning, everyone. 7 minutes after 11. Well, it was back in early December, right here on the First Serve, that we certainly alerted our tennis fans that there was some concern over Thanasi Kokkinakis's shoulder. And it's been confirmed in the last few days that, unfortunately, certainly for us that love our tennis, that Kokkinakis will not take part, not only Brisbane, but the entire Australian summer. And how long after that, we'll have to wait and see, depending on looming surgery. And of course, Kooyong confirmed this week to host the Australia versus the United States Davis Cup tie. The first time Leighton Hewitt will be in the captain's chair, which is set down, of course, for early March at the spiritual home of Australian tennis, revealed here on the First Serve back in early December. Coach extraordinaire, he's at metrotennis.com.au if you want to check out Paul Aiken. Good to see you, Paul.
Good morning, BP, and to all the listeners. And it's an honour to be here with a lady who has certainly the player's pulse, BP.
The player's pulse you're going with. Okay, I was just waiting with bated breath what you were going to say. We thought we were going to have a full brigade this morning.
No.
You know, the First Lady?
Yeah.
Yep, just lost her bearings.
What is the excuse this time? What could it be?
How do you get your days mixed up? Well, do you know what day it is every day? Or do you wake up sometimes thinking, no, Monday, is it Tuesday, is it Wednesday?
I'm not going to bag her for that because that's creeping into my persona.
Charlotte James, not here. We're going to get her on the phone very shortly, the First Lady. But we do have a lady. She's the editor of the Australian Tennis Magazine. We speak to her every week, and we thought it's about time that she graced us with her presence actually here in the studio. Vivian Christie, good to see you.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me here.
Great to have you in. Of course, the next edition out very shortly of the Australian Tennis Magazine, the January edition, but you do have the program, the official program of the Australian Open, and that is, I'm sure, selling like hotcakes at the moment.
It is, I hope, as well. But yes, it's a very handy reference point. It's got all the player rankings and all the year-end performances, so it's very handy to have.
Indeed. Now, we want your interaction this morning because it's sort of like our tennis review of the year, if you like, different categories we're looking back on as we're about to sign off 2015 and look ahead to a massive 2016, which starts here on our shores in Australia for the month of January, which we own, really, the month of tennis. 9429 1116. As always, we've got an Australian Open guided tour at Melbourne Park, thanks to our good friends at Tennis World to give away. You too can have a Grand Slam experience with Tennis World. Court hire, coaching, function rooms, and a whole lot more for all things tennis. Visit tennisworld.net.au. Just off the top, Paul, just the news about Thanasi Kokkinakis. I mean, it is disappointing. We certainly knew there was some concern there with his shoulder. He's tried to train. He's been putting in some hard yards, certainly in the last 3 or 4 weeks. The change of coaching setup going across to Ben Mathias. But disappointing he's not going to be front and centre for the month of January.
Very disappointing, that BP, because I think everyone loves watching Thanasi play. And the rotator cuff, very tricky injury. Just about every tennis player around the globe has had an issue with their shoulder. Look, hopefully the surgery goes well and we'll see him shortly after in the American events.
Huge draw card, isn't he, Viv? And look, you know, you think back to last year's Australian Open. He defeats Ernest Gulbis in that amazing match yet on the show courts, and he's high-fiving everyone. And he's got his ranking inside the top 100, a year younger than Nick Kyrgios, but certainly advancing like we thought he would. Good head on his shoulders. And it really set himself for a big 2016. So it's an early setback, but hopefully it's not going to be a huge setback that'll derail him for
you know, a bit of a chunk of 2016.
Yeah, it's certainly disappointing. I mean, he just creates such an atmosphere, as you said, out there on the court, and the fans love him. And I guess the main point is that he gets better, and he's still young and has plenty of time to make up that lost ground.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can only hope that he does get better as quickly as possible. Kooyong,
sure.
Gee, what a place for Leighton Hewitt to start his Davis Cup captaincy. Jim Courier will be on the other side.
Could it get any better?
The two who will share a bit of box time at the Channel 7, of course, for those 2 weeks of January. They're going to put a grass court in. Paul, this is going to be fantastic.
Fascinating tie, really. I mean, to play the US at Kooyong, I mean, I don't think you could get better than that.
Viv?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much nice synergy in this tie, isn't there? Leighton played his first Davis Cup against the US in an historic tie, so now to go back to the historical home of tennis here in Australia, it's just got a really nice feel to it.
Absolutely. And some news just coming through in the last couple of days, which is really disappointing for two-time French Open finalist Robin Söderling, who's going to retire at the age of 31. Great trivia question, of course. He ended that great run of Rafael Nadal when he was dominating Roland Garros, that streak broken back in 2009. Unfortunately, got glandular fever, got to world number four, but it's absolutely derailed him to the point where he cannot train at 100%, and he's decided to call it a day. He's tried and tried to train, make a comeback, get back on the tour, but it just hasn't worked for him.
Well, essentially, this is what happens to a lot of players. It's never usually that they're playing bad that they stop. It's usually an injury that prevents this, and we saw it with Tisparovic, and then, of course, the unfortunate story with Marty Fish. I think the world stopped that day that he beat Rafa. That was an incredible match. I'd never seen a guy hit as many winners.
He was an interesting cat, wasn't he, too, Viv? He played a really good style of tennis, but how would you have described Robin Söderling and all, you know, the time you've covered the game of tennis?
Yeah, he was an interesting figure in tennis. Some people said he was a little bit polarising. I mean, you know, beating Rafa was never going to make him popular with the fans, I guess, in a way. So, I just feel really disappointed for him in a way, because I know he tried so hard, and it just shows the intensity that's required at that level.
Yeah, absolutely. So that news coming through in the last couple of days. And Paul, the very sad news that has certainly shocked the whole tennis world, particularly here in Australia, but certainly right around the world. It's such a tight-knit community, and coaches, no coaches, and players, no players. You live in each other's pockets, travelling at the globe, playing this great sport. But the passing of Darren Tandy. Now, for our SEN listeners who mightn't follow tennis as closely as other sports, they mightn't be too familiar, but a man who's been a central coaching figure in this country. He's been Matthew Ebden's coach for a large part of the journey. Mm. We actually spoke to him over at Wimbledon in the middle of this year.
We did.
And unfortunately has passed away battling a horrible illness, which has struck him down in the last 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, well, that was very sad. A very dedicated tour coach. So many players that I'd spoken to held him in such enormous regard. Really had very high emotional intelligence as a coach, a real tour coach, coach of Matt Ebden, as you've just mentioned, and James Ward, to name a few. Very sad.
Yeah, it is, Viv. And I've been looking at a lot of the tweets from players, Luke Saville, Ben Mitchell, a few in the last 24 to 48 hours. I mean, really, really heartfelt. I mean, a coach and a player develop an extremely tight bond.
Yeah, of course, it's just terrible news. I mean, that coach has such an influential role, particularly on those younger players. And, just very sad and terrible news.
So we certainly our condolences to the Tandy family and everyone who's been affected by Darren's loss, because we really enjoyed that chat in the middle of this year.
We did, mate. It was great.
Just speaking of Matthew Ebden, I've got a little a list that's been sent through to me, the early sort of list for qualies for the middle of January heading into the Australian Open. We know that Ebden was right on the cusp, 106 in the world. With Kokkinakis going out, obviously everyone will sort of push up, and if there's another injury or two in the next couple of weeks. And there has been some little doubt on Milos Raonic, but we believe he's going to play, but pulled out of the International Premier Tennis League late in the campaign. You would think he either gets in directly, Matt, or we can pretty safely say, I think, that he's going to get a discretionary wildcard.
I think so,
he hasn't been named in the qualifying here. The other Australians, Ben Mitchell, Luke Saville, JP Smith, and also Jordan Thompson, have been named in the 128-man draw at the stage.
Well, if he hasn't entered, one would suspect he knows something that we don't. I'd say he's in.
Well, JP's the other interesting one because he didn't obviously play the wild card, and we're not quite sure the exact circumstances there, but he may come through qualies or he may get a wild card of his own, and you would say, gee, he might be deserving of potentially getting that wild card. And there's two others to
give
away.
Very interesting. Jordan Thompson and Ben Mitchell really, to me, look like they deserve one. So it's going to be fascinating.
It is. And, of course, Viv, there's no sort of set time frame, is there? I mean, they'll wait maybe to some of these players play in Brisbane in the first week, so there's no particular date that they say, okay, we're going to give away these two other wild cards. So they keep us hanging and keep us speculating.
Well, there's no deadline that I'm aware of. And yeah, it's certainly interesting to see how those players perform. I guess in the first couple of rounds in Brisbane is always a good test. So
Right.
Yeah, let's wait and see what happens there.
All right. Now, we're going to start to have a look back at 2015. And we're going to go through a few categories this morning. We'll get Charlotte James on the line very shortly. We might see if we can get CJ involved in this conversation. Let's just wipe the sleep away from her eyes. The top 10 as it's finished, of course, in 2015. We'll start with the men. Djokovic, Murray, Federer, Vavrinka, Nadal, Burdick, Ferrer, Nishikori, Gasquet and Songa. So the change from 2014, Gasquet and Songa back into the top 10, Cilic and Raonic dropping out of the top 10. And obviously those players from 11 to 20, there's been some interesting additions. So Gilles Simon, David Goffin, who's had a great year, Bernard Tomic, Benoit Paire, who's had an amazing season, and Dominic Thiem are the players who have come into the top 20 who are outside in 2014. The players that have dropped out of the top 20, obviously Grigor Dimitrov, not had the year that he would have expected. Ernest Gulbis, who's had a horrible year. Roberto Bautista Agut, we love saying his name, Paul, he's dropped out of the top 20. So has Tommy Robredo, Gael Monfils, and also Fabio. Only dropped a spot, though, 20 to 21. So he's always sort of hung
around.
Love
Fabio.
That particular area. But just, I suppose, before we go into categories, the men's year, obviously the sort of status quo at the top. We've got Djokovic, Murray, Federer, Vavrinka. Nadal, I suppose, becomes a fascinating topic of conversation. What can he do in 2016? Can he climb the mountain again and really challenge Djokovic, Murray and Federer? Are there going to be other players emerging to the top 10, top 20? But how do you sort of summarise 2015 just from a men's point of view?
Well, globally, as far as the men are concerned, I don't think much has changed. Hats off to Djokovic. He's managed to sustain his dominance. Look, the top four or five players, I think, are streets ahead of the rest. Now, including Nadal, I think he's got his mojo back. His serve and forehand patterns were certainly back in the Masters event. Plenty of the same usual suspects are still hanging around. Gasquet, Burdick, Ferrer, Isner, that have been outstanding players in the top 20, but I don't think they can make the jump to the top four or five.
Well, this is the big question, isn't it, Viv? Because we love Dominic Thiem. I reckon he's a really good young player. From our own Australian perspective, we hope Bernard can keep advancing. Goffin's had a terrific year. And then we sort of see some of the older guys drop in, drop out. They can have sort of little career resurgences. But it's just fascinating, the men's game right now. Who's going to step up and challenge the big guns who have been there for a long time?
What I think is really interesting is that we thought it would be Nishikori and Raonic and Dimitrov that would be stepping in and being those challengers, but they haven't quite done that. I think it's almost the next gen, you know, it might be the...
Correct.
...the Koric or, you know, it's just somebody unexpected. I think we have to look to another generation completely.
Well, we're going to cross over to Hawaii, where Charlotte James is on the line. I think it's Hawaiian time. It'll be Saturday in Hawaii right now. CJ, good morning.
I think that explains the day confusion beautifully, right? Thank you for covering for me like that.
How is that beach?
It's Sunday, everybody. It's Sunday.
How is that beach in Hawaii?
Well, it's very comfortable, thank you. Just another chapter in my jet set lifestyle.
Now, we want to involve you in the conversation this morning.
I don't think I deserve to be involved, but anyway.
You've been given a late reprieve. You're on the alternates list. Now you've come in.
I've taken your chair, by the way, too.
That's fine by me. You deserve it.
We were just quickly talking about the men's game. What's your own summation, CJ? As we look back at another really interesting year in men's tennis, Djokovic, Murray, Federer, Vavrinka and Nadal, all at the top. Those who have been hunting for a while, they stay in the top 10, but there seems to be some sort of distance, and we're seeing some younger players emerge into the top 20.
Yeah, look, you know, I love the way that with that top three or four players, people write one or other of them off, and, you know, oh, you know, Federer's never going to get back there, or Andy's never going to get back from surgery, and And, you know, they're just improving again and swapping in and out. So, you know, Djokovic has got that number one spot nailed down, apparently, at the moment. But certainly number two, you know, it keeps cycling through the different guys. And I think that that's really interesting. I'm not sure Nadal is nailed on back yet. I'm not 100% convinced. I think he probably took advantage a bit of the end of the season and, you know, everybody else was running on fumes a bit. And I think it'll be really telling to see how he starts this season. But, you know, it would be great to see him back up there challenging for the top spots as well.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to weigh into the conversation, 94291116 for our listeners out there as we look back at the men's and the women's year. And you can agree, disagree with any of our comments this morning. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to go around the panel. And we're going to go through a few different categories. I just want to give a quick special mention to Viktor Troicki's had a really good year, 94-22. Ivar Karlovic, still playing very good tennis at 36 years of age to be 23 in the world. Alexander Dolgopolov, who I love watching play, but who would know what he's going to do from shot to
incredible
shot. 23, went out to 80, came back to 36. Hyun Chung, he is going somewhere, the young man, 167-51. And Tommy Haas is coming back for the Australian Open. I think he's 47 at 476. I just heard a little sigh there, CJ. Does that mean, how good is it to have Tommy back?
Been hearing things. Something on the line. It's a really bad line.
Let's go through the categories. Riser of the year. That's the one I want to touch on. Who's impressed you the most? Paul, I'll start with you.
Well, you stole my thunder there. I think Viktor Troicki. He started from 101 to 22, and this one's a little bit left of field, but I'm going to say Taylor Fritz because he jumped from 1,044 to 177.
Your riser of the year. Mm. Okay, so you had Viktor. No, mm. I didn't have him. I was just giving him a special mention.
Okay.
So you can stick with him, but I like the Taylor Fritz one as well.
Covering all his bases.
He's going somewhere.
I mean, who jumps that much?
That's a damn good effort.
Two challenges.
Who's impressed you the most, Viv? Riser of the year.
I've actually been very impressed with Dominic Thiem. You spoke about him earlier as well. So he was outside the top 50 at the start of the year. He peaked at number 18 in August. He won three titles, all on clay, but really stylish player to watch with that beautiful single-handed backhand. And he has what's really interesting about him is he lost first round in Sydney and at the Australian Open this year. So he starts this year with virtually no points to defend.
Mm. Good story. CJ?
Are we just doing boys at the moment?
Just the lads, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to keep it close to home. I think Bernard Tomic has been really impressive with that ranking now. I just think he kind of crept up there. Everybody's eye was off the ball a little bit. You know, watching Kyrgios and watching Kokkinakis, and then all of a sudden Bernie Tomic is number 18 in the world, and I think that's a really great, you know, I mean, maybe not on mathematically, but then that's not my strong suit. But, you know, I think that's a really impressive ranking.
Good call.
I like the fact we're going with all different players here, because my riser of the year, I did not see this coming at all, but I'm going Benoit Paire. He's gone 126-19. He's got a bit of personality, the Frenchman. Just in your face sort of thing. Fourth round Monte Carlo, fourth round US, third round Wimbledon for a guy who'd never really featured in the majors. Won three futures, three challenges as well. So he has had a huge year. Not sure if he can go any further. We'll wait and see, but 126-19. Good effort. Slider. Let's go Slider of the Year. We're going to start with you, Paul.
Well, I've gone for Ernst Gublas.
Who?
Gublas.
Gulbis,
pardon me.
Thank you very much. Look, although he played a bit like what you just said.
Yes. Well, semis at Roland Garros last year, but he's really stunk it up this year. An odd cat, and when he hits those forehands, I feel like he actually might fly out of the stadium the way he takes his racket back.
He does have the biggest wingspan in tennis.
Mate,
no doubt. He had a horrible year. It all started at the Australian Open when he was beaten by Kokkinakis, and he never recovered. Viv?
My slider of the year, probably not mathematically, but Grigor Dimitrov, you know, he was just outside the top 10. He was number 11. We expected him to go up and up from there. He had a good Australian Open, but then it just went all downhill from there. He finished the year at number 28, and he's far too talented to be there.
Looked the heir apparent.
Yeah. Mm. CJ?
Yeah, I agree with Viv on this one. I think Dimitrov's been horribly disappointing this season, and I think people, you know, really had him marked to even, you know, start to push into that top four or five, even over, you know, some of the other pretenders to those spots. And I just think he didn't he hasn't pushed the button at all.
All right, we're all thinking the same because I had a tie between Dimitrov and Gulbis, so we're all thinking alike. I like that. Hey, we'll just squeeze in a little break here. We've got a cricket update to come. More of the men. We're going to get into the women as well. CJ's in Hawaii. Viv's here. Paul's here. I'm here. 26 past 11, the first serve at 11.16 SEN.
You're listening to The First Serve, talking the world of tennis on 11.16 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. For AFT hire, for all your temporary fencing and portable toilet hire, call 1300 946 660 or log on to afthire.com.au.
29 to midday, Paul Aitken, Vivian Christie and Charlotte James with me this morning, Brett Phillips, as we look back at 2015 in the world of tennis before we start jetting around Australia to cover the start of a big summer to Brisbane and to Perth. We start with the Hopman Cup and the Brisbane International next week. Okay, we're going through the men and the different categories you can weigh into, 9429 1116. We've talked about our riser of the year in men's tennis, our slider of the year. Most impressive. Who's impressed you the most, Paul, of any player on the tour this year?
Well, I think that's the easiest question. Novak Djokovic, 82-6, arguably the best season I've ever seen. Up there with Federer's 2006, I think you'd argue strongly there. Stan impressed me at times, but Djokovic owns Andy and Roger in the majors.
CJ.
Absolutely agree. You can't look
past. We can't draw Djokovic, swords there.
Can you? I mean, he's been number one for a century now, and there's just no sign of him cracking either. That's the incredible thing. You know, in the past, Roger's dominated, Rafa's dominated. They've had their turn, but Djokovic just looks absolutely bulletproof, and it's going to be a very interesting January, I think.
You're going to go against the trend here, Viv? Or?
No. How could you possibly go against Djokovic? Not even for this year. If you're asking me for the last 5 years, I'd still say Novak. Yeah, you know, that 82-6 record, 31-5 against top 10 opponents, hasn't been outside a final since January last year. No, how can you tip against Djokovic?
Well said, folks, because guess what? I have gone with Novak Djokovic as the most impressive player. It is very hard to go past it. I mean, you're right, CJ, bulletproof. I mean, it's keeping Roger Federer going right now. It's keeping him awake at night. How can I beat Novak?
Absolutely think that it's a lot to do with Roger's resurgence, is just having that, you know, incredible threat, I think, really, as much as anything to his legacy. You know, and at the moment, I think they're both competing to see who's going to be tennis's first. Is it $100 million man? Something crazy like that. They're both sort of on the brink of having made that much money from prize money. I think it just, you know, Federer, above all, I think he wants to keep that legacy intact and wants to just keep his nose ahead of his rivals.
Yeah, it's fascinating to watch from the outside. Your least impressive player for 2016, Paul?
Okay, well, I'm going to say here Nick Kyrgios, because I hope he learns to control his emotional state soon on court and searches near and far for the best coach and physical conditioner, because I think for his ability at the moment, he's underachieving, but we'll see.
CJ.
I am going to say world number 7, David Ferrer. I'm very hard on him. I know that all the time, but I just think he, you know, is there a player who is as average as David Ferrer? For a top 10 player who's consistently top 10, he's got a 3-11 win-loss record against fellow top 10 players this year. He just doesn't have the belief, I don't think, to push through that glass ceiling.
There you go. The thoughts of CJ. No, well said. Viv?
I had a little bit of an overlap here. I thought, you know, I said Grigor was the biggest slider, but he was also my least impressive. As I said earlier, he's just far too talented to be not performing well. Maybe the coaching change will help him next year, but certainly we hope so because, yeah, we expect more from him.
Well, I
agree. On the SMS from Ando, if I'd been given the flick by Maria, I'd have dropped a few rankings points too. So that's according to Ando. My least impressive player for 2016 is Marinko Matovic. He's had a horrible year. I know he's had some bad injuries, had 15 first-round exits. I saw him for a week at the wild card, and it'd be fair to say that week just typified his entire career. But a horrible year for Marinko. He has just not got going. I'll give him his dues. Fantastic effort to be a late bloomer, to have 4 years in a row in the top 100. I hope he's been able to make a bit of money out of the game and at least set himself up, because he battled for a long time on the futures and the challenges, and he's got himself in a really good condition. But my least impressive player. Had a horrible year. Let's hope he can rebound, because you can play good tennis beyond the age of 30. It's proven. Let's hope he does so. Story of the year. Paul, your story of the year. Number one story of the year.
Well, look, sadly, I think it was the Kyrgios sledge. I wish it wasn't, but it actually knocked off footy here for 24 hours in this station, as I recall. The frenzy that followed showed that controversy truly engages people.
It does, yeah. I reckon you'll get a few people who would
and an honourable second
the story of the year
to Bernie with his sledging of Pat Rafter and TA.
Yep, and we're looking forward to seeing what the reaction's going to be. I think we're all sitting here, OK, what's 2016 going to produce from an on- and off-court perspective? Your story of the year, Viv?
Well, maybe it's my Pollyanna personality, but for me, a story of the year is more of a positive story, and I think CJ might agree with this one. I thought it was Great Britain's win in the Davis Cup. I thought that was a fantastic story.
Well, that's true, absolutely.
I loved seeing Andy Murray. He won 8 singles rubbers, I think 3 or 4 doubles rubbers, and just was so committed to it. Bit more history there, and yeah, I think it could be a good springboard for his singles career as well.
CJ.
I'm absolutely with Viv. First Davis Cup title for 79 years. And, you know, Australia's had a Davis Cup title drought since 2003. You Aussies cannot understand what, you know, the momentousness of that achievement. And just, not just Andy, I think. I just loved also seeing Jamie. You know, he really contributed to that win. It wasn't just the Andy Murray show. Jamie also played a massive role in getting them to that final and then getting them through that final. And I just thought it was really nice also for him. You know, he's often in the shadow of his brother, but Britain wouldn't have won that Davis Cup title without Jamie Murray either.
That is true. No, it's a great story of the year. In fact, I think it was Tegan Higginbotham who writes a column in the Herald Sun today, CJ. She was fascinated at the fact that Andy was voted the BBC Personality of the Year. What did you think about that?
Oh, it was fantastic. And it was a really tight... Do you know, I don't know how much people over here know about BBC Sports Personality of the Year, but
yes,
it is the most awesome event every year, just before Christmas. Big awards ceremony. They put up all of the sporting performers, you know, who've had... So during 2012, obviously, a lot of British Olympians were in the running for Sports Personality of the Year. And it's a huge event and a huge accolade over in Britain. And he was a really well-deserved winner. He picked Jess Ennis to the post. I think a lot of people thought that she would take the... they call it the spotty. But it was Andy's, and I think very well deserved.
All right, story of the year for mine, because I just love an underdog. I love someone who's sort of just come off the canvas, who hasn't been able to do much for a long time and just blossoming in the later stages of their life. I'm going Victor Estrella Burgos from the Dominican Republic.
Mate, you're on your own there, I think.
I tell you what, but this man has hardly made a dollar out of the game. He's battled and battled and battled and battled. At the ripe old age of 34, he cracks through and wins his first ever ATP event. He's gone on, he's in the top 70 now in men's tennis. There's actually a challenger pool that's been set up in the capital, which I think is Santo Domingo or something like that. Not a part of the world I've been to, and many I wouldn't who were listening to the program this morning, but I just love a battler because who can just get off the canvas and have some success in their career. Because it's hard out there.
It is. It is.
Brett, you've really done your research, I must say.
Victor Estrella.
I'm prepared for this,
Burgos. Okay, now, 3 favourite players outside the top 25. And this is just a subjective thing that you just love to watch who... not only have excited you this year, but just your love makes you actually want to turn the TV on or actually go live and watch them play outside of the top 25 who are always thereabouts. Paul, just a couple of smokies here.
Well, look, I'm loyal to the Aussies, actually. So John Millman, JP Smith and Sam Groth, I think, what more could you want?
Okay. So what do you like about them, though, when you're going to watch them play?
I love the way Millman competes. And, you know, his story is great. The shoulder surgeries, JP Smith's gone a different route, college tennis in America, and Sam Groth, of course, you know, with his sabbatical, almost giving tennis away.
Yep.
That's what I love.
Okay, Viv?
I actually went with Jack Sock, who's just outside the top 25 at number 26. I really like his big 1-2 game with his serve and his forehand.
Wow. Yeah,
so I think he's impressive. I think he's good for American men's tennis, and when American tennis is strong, there's a theory that tennis is strong generally. So, and really likeable guy. So.
I don't think we want to help them too much more with the kids they've got coming through.
Indeed. Anyone else?
I'm always impressed with Alexander Dolgopolov. I like to watch his game to see what's, I guess it's the surprise factor, seeing what's coming next. Yep. And yeah, so those
he's
were a
incredible.
Couple.
Yeah.
Okay. CJ?
Dolgopolov, definitely. Just love his very the variety that he has on his game. Marcus Baghdatis, a bit of a comeback from him this year, and yep. You know, I just love watching him. I've always been very keen on his game. And Feliciano Lopez, just for the way that he mixes it up a bit and, you know, brings a bit of serve and volley into the game, and again, a bit of variety.
Okay, well, I heard Dolgopolov because I just love watching him play. Groth I had because I think Sam's refreshing from a serve volley point of view. I threw in Lucas Rosol because this guy, just every now and then, that when he had against Nadal at Wimbledon a couple of years ago, this guy doesn't do it every week, but he has the ability to absolutely just take a really high-seated player and take them to town.
Big occasion player, first strike player.
Well, when he's on and he keeps the ball in the tram lines, he can hit some of the most breathtaking shots. I don't think he's the most popular guy in the locker room from what I know, but he can play some fine tennis occasionally. We need to slip in a break. We're going to get to the girls next. 9429 1116 if you want to weigh in. It's our year in review 2015. That is the men. We'll see what is in store for the new year, but we'll focus on the WTA and the girls next.
Show me the money. I need to feel you, Jerry. Show me the money. Jerry, you better yell. Show me the money. Show me the money.
Well, CJ touched on it a little bit earlier. Novak Djokovic, Roger Federer poised to become the first $100 million men in tennis next year in a subplot to the new Grand Slam season. No player has broken the $100 million on-court earnings barrier. But the world number one, Novak, and world number three, Roger, should reach that landmark next year. Djokovic has just over $94 million in his pocket in prize money, while Federer has banked $97.3 million. Compare this to another era, guys. Rod Laver, the last man to complete the calendar Grand Slam, made $1.5 million out of tennis. John McEnroe, $12.5 million, and Pete Sampras, $43 million.
That is just incredible.
There you go.
Gone are the days from Wimbledon where they'd present the winner with a gift voucher to Harrods, I think.
Do you think if we sent a little email through to Roger or Novak, they might sponsor the first serve for the next maybe decade, just to lock us in here at SEN?
We could hope that would be the case.
Yeah, I reckon we might be half a chance. Let's have a look at the girls. Completion of the 2015 WTA season. Fascinating year. Gabin Muguruza, of course, the big star who rose from 20 to 3 to get herself right in contention as a real talking point when it comes to the majors. Venus Williams, at the ripe old age of 35, back into the top 10. Flavia Panetta, who now has retired. Lucy Safarova taking another jump in her career to get into the top 10. Disappointing year for Eugenie Bouchard. That has certainly been well documented. From the top 10 to well outside, just didn't get going at all. Wozniacki dropping out, Dominika Sibulkova dropping out, and Anna Ivanovic, who had risen to world number 5. And players dropping out of the top 20 this year, Ekaterina Makarova, Andrea Pekovic, Jelena Jankovic, and Elise Cornet. But all players have sort of fluctuated in their careers, gone in and out of that top 20. A couple of special mentions, Victoria Azarenka, who's an interesting one, who's obviously come back from injury, has gone from 32 to 22. And I suppose the jury out whether she can get back to the lofty heights that she reached a few years ago. Daria Gavrilova, what an outstanding year, 233 to 36. Joanna Konta, no one probably saw this coming, 150 to 47. And plenty of potentials at the start of 2015 that have kicked on. I suppose Belinda Bencic is the big one there at just 18 years of age, from 187 to 32 to 14 in the last 3 years. So a lot of good stories in women's tennis. I suppose, guys, just very quickly before we get into our categories, just your summary. Serena takes out three of the majors. We definitely thought it was going to be four, and then Roberta Vinci caused the biggest upset of the year. But, Paul, Serena, do you think she's still capable of repeating the dose and being the standout player in 2016?
Well, yeah, I think she probably is, until perhaps she has an injury or something happens. Look, the strongest hips in women's tennis won't be moved off the baseline. Just a phenomenal player. And we've got to make mention of her sister too, Venus.
Well, that's it. I mean, CJ, we look at all those players underneath Serena, Halep, Muguruza, Sharapova, who can't beat Serena. It's been such a long time. Radvanska jumps back up, having won the season-ending championships. Kvitova's won a couple of Wimbledons, had a tough year from an illness perspective. It hasn't always performed that well at the other majors on a consistent basis. So it's Serena and then this big pack, isn't it, trying to chase her down?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the way that Serena's talking, she's got no intention of retiring or winding things back particularly either. So, you know, really, you can't see anybody on the horizon yet, I don't think, that's going to have the opportunity to really beat Serena repeatedly, I think, and unseat her.
That is the challenge, isn't it, Viv? Can any of these girls step up?
Well, I think there's just such an intimidation factor with Serena. I mean, it's Serena and the rest. And, you know, and the thing about Serena, you saw, I think she had 13 three-set matches in the Grand Slams this year. She, you know, there were so many matches that she shouldn't have won, but she found a way to win. So, yeah, I do think that there's a high intimidation factor. I think that Serena has a lot of motivation for 2016. It's an Olympic year as well. She missed out on the Grand Slam, but she'll probably be targeting now a Golden Grand Slam with the Olympics in there as well.
Yeah, always fascinating, the Williams sisters. Time not on our side, guys. We'll whip through these very quickly. Riser of the year, Paul, in women's tennis.
Timia Bacinski for mine and Gabine Muguruza.
Okay. Care to elaborate at all?
Yes, well, Bacinski ranked 48, made the semifinals of Roland Garros, yep. Beating Keys and Kvitova en route, and Muguruza, big jump, I think, to get from 23-3 is to the pointy end is impressive.
Yeah, great story. CJ, riser of the year for you in women's tennis?
Muguruza, I think everybody thought she was going to be good. I don't think people thought that she would come good so quickly, and she had a really great season. So just remains to be seen whether she can push on from there.
Okay, Viv?
I also tossed up between Tamea Bacinski and Garbiñe, but I settled on Muguruza as well. I think she's just played such positive tennis and, yeah, been a great year for her.
All right, I'm going a bit lower down the rankings, but I did mention her in a special mention, but I'm going Joanna Konta. I thought it was just a great story this year as the riser of the year from 150 in the world to 47. And I watched her play a few times. She's got the competitive juices flowing and... good luck. I don't know how much higher she can go, but a fantastic story for mine. Slider of the year, Paul?
Probably won't be popular, but I've said Casey Dellacqua, and it's. I don't think she could have actually prevented any of the concussion and what's happened, but from 29 to 116 at a time when we need female representation, it's tough.
Yeah, tough year for Casey, that's for sure. I'm not going to see her at this Australian summer. CJ?
I'd say Bouchard, actually. Again, possibly not mathematically, but... you know, such a prospect in 2014 and a steady top 10 player to drop down to 49. And, you know, she had issues, obviously, right at the end of the season at the US Open, but she wasn't going anywhere fast before that.
No, I had Eugenie as well, so that'll get that in quickly.
Yes, I also had Eugenie.
Okay, well, she'll be in Hobart. Hopefully she can kickstart her year in Hobart, but a horrible year and compounded by what happened at the US Open as well. Most impressive, Paul?
Oh, well, we've already talked about it, really, ad nauseum. Serena Williams, how could it not be? 69-5. She's done similarly to what Novak has done.
Viv?
Of course, Serena. Who else could it be?
CJ?
Serena.
Okay, well, I'm going different.
Ooh.
There's a few different players who'll get into different categories here, but, I mean, I sort of take it as a given that Serena's going to produce this sort of stuff year in, year out. So I'm going Muguruza for mine as the most impressive for the year. I mean, She's got some court presence about her, got a big game.
She does.
Looks like she feels like she belongs on this big stage, and that self-belief has been really evident this year. Least impressive, Paul?
Well, my least impressive, I'm a bit tied, really, between Wozniacki and Ivanovic, and possibly Azarenka, as we've already talked about. But, you know, the door will open eventually for Serena, and those girls have got to be within striking distance.
CJ?
This is going to be controversial, I think, because she's the number two in the world. I'm actually really a bit disappointed with Halep, to be honest. You know, I was always such a massive fan of hers when she was ripping through the Pro Tour events and then some of those sort of Tier 3 WTA events. And, you know, she had such a meteoric rise. And I just think she seems to have to be falling at the last hurdle. She's had a couple of titles this year, but definitely can't beat Serena. And it's almost as if, you know, she suddenly found herself at the top of the mountain and got vertigo.
Yeah, tough year. Darren Cahill, let's see what he can do with her. Viv?
Caroline Wozniacki, I thought that she was very disappointing this year. She was top five for the most of the year, but that was because she was defending US Open final points, and then she lost spectacularly in the first round there.
Well, I'm going Olivia Rogowska. I thought she was the most least impressive for mine. Dropped out to the top 300. I saw her beaten first round at the wild card last week. I'm just not sure where she's going at all, Olivia. She was so close to cracking the top 100, but just hasn't made any genuine
Fair
improvements
enough.
In her game that I can see. We'll take our last break. We'll come back because we've got our story of the year from all of us in women's tennis coming up next on The First Serve.
You're listening to The First Serve, talking the world of tennis on 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. For AFT Hire, for all your temporary fencing and portable toilet hire, call 1300 946 660 or log on to afthire.com.au.
Welcome back a couple of minutes to the news as we look back on the year of tennis 2015, the whole panel here this morning. We're finishing off with the girls, the WTA season, and our story of the year in women's tennis. This will be interesting. Paul, I'm going to start with you.
Well, I think it was Serena's loss to Vinci, as on the day she was beaten by a brilliant slice backhand that really challenged her strike zone.
Okay, nicely done. CJ?
I think it was Serena getting within a whisker of a calendar year Grand Slam that rocked my world.
If?
I love the comeback of Venus Williams, actually. I think she started the year with a title, she finished with a title, she got back inside the top 10 for the first time in 4 years, and she says she wants to win a Grand Slam again.
Okay, yeah, good story, Venus. Look, I know this is very, very left field. There's a lot I could have gone for, but I love a bit of an odd one, a bit like Victor Estrella Burgos. But my story of the year is Margarita Gasparyan. Heard of her? She's from Russia.
You just pick ones that you like pronouncing the names of.
Won her first WTA title in little Azerbaijan.
Ah.
I think they've got a tennis court there. Had never won a WTA match. Got a beautiful one-handed backhand. I saw a couple of highlights. And I know it's left field. I know it's not big. But just keep an eye on this young laddie and see what she could do in 2016.
Wow.
She's got something. Mm-hmm. You like that, CJ?
That was bigger than Serena for you.
No. He likes to pick talent, doesn't he?
He just likes pronouncing the names, I'm telling you.
A good underdog. Thank you, Charlotte. Nice work.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be there, Brett.
Yep, very good. Enjoy that last couple of days in Maui, and we'll see you back on Australian shores. Great to have you in, Viv.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Make sure you get a copy of the Australian Tennis Magazine, everybody. The January edition just about out. All good news agencies, tennismag.com.au if you want to subscribe. Well done, Chief.
Thank you, BP, and a shout out to my auntie Evelyn, who loves SEN.
Great stuff. We'll talk to you from Brisbane, live at the Brisbane International for the start of the summer of tennis next Sunday.